It's Monday, February 6th, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight we talk about instant messaging. Messaging.
Let's do this.
So we were in good old Rochester this past weekend.
Great.
Yeah, we had quite a fun weekend lined up and kind of got pissed on a little bit.
A lot?
Well, let's see. It started out great. You know, we're driving back to Rochester. We're going with two of our friends in Scott's brand new Mazda 3. It's going to be a good time. Scott gets a little pulled over along the way.
Great.
Gets a little 80 and a 65 speeding ticket that he may or may not fight in court.
Great.
And then we get to Rochester to discover that the main event that we had driven to Rochester for had been canceled suddenly that morning by the board of the club that was running it.
Another very sarcastic single word.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't a total loss, though, because we ended up just going to Millennium Games, which is the best freaking gaming store in the Eastern Seaboard as far as we're concerned.
Well, as far as we know. I haven't heard of a better one.
Yeah, we haven't heard of or found a better gaming store than this place. We bought, between all of us, over $300 worth of board games.
Woot. Which amounted to what, like 5 games?
Yeah. Well, no, we got 5 games, and then between our friends, they got, I think, 2 more games.
What did they get?
One of them bought Illuminati.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That was it?
No, it might have been more. I don't remember.
I don't think anyone else bought anything.
We got Attica, Citadels, Through the Desert, and Dekar, and Stratego.
Woo!
Yeah, Stratego's a fun. But we'll talk about all that on a gaming day.
Tomorrow and probably the next week on Tuesday and the next week on Tuesday.
Yeah, but luckily we ran into all our friends and we pretty much salvaged the weekend as best we could.
We salvaged a little bit. Man, it feels like MechWarrior Mercenaries and you blow up all the enemies and you pick up like a laser or two.
Well, I guess I had a better time than you since one, I didn't fall asleep early Saturday night, so I actually got to hang out with everyone. Yeah, I mean, there were about 10 of us in a tiny apartment yelling and screaming and arguing philosophy and solipsism and all that crap. Scott's asleep in the middle of the floor, just kind of curled up with his coat over him like a blanket.
I was cold and tired.
We woke you up to give you wonton soup that you had ordered but forgotten about.
I didn't forget about it.
You seemed to have forgotten about it. You didn't seem to know why we were waking you up.
No, I was semi-awake, like I was hearing some things here and there, but... You know, never put enough effort in to get up. And then I knew food arrived, so, you know, I was just sleeping. Whatever.
Yeah, but at least anyway, in the news, Google did something that it's generated a lot of grousing from both sides, and I think it was a good thing, though. But they delisted a spammer, essentially.
Mm-hmm. They did this all the time, but this is the first time they've done it visibly, because they've done it to other big companies, but invisibly. But now they did it visibly to a large, important company.
Not only that, but they stood up and said, yes, we did this, we'll do it again.
Well, it was a guy on his official Google worker on his blog said it. It wasn't like a Google press release.
What happened was the German BMW site was doing something kind of shady. I mean, yeah, everyone knows that Google uses PageRank, which is a complex trade secret algorithm for determining how useful a website is based on what you're searching for.
And people try to reverse engineer and figure out how PageRank works so that they can make pages all around the internet to raise the page ranks of other pages so that they will show up on Google very high up when someone searches for something.
I mean, a lot of the basics are that linking to a page will boost its page rank as long as the link comes from a useful page.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was a problem not too long ago where blogs were just ruining Google. Because blogs all link to each other in this kind of incestuous link pile of links. So what they did is they just decided that links between blogs don't count, and that solved that. And they've done various things like that over the years to tweak their page
rank. I'm not sure if that's exactly what they did.
That's what they did to a point. Links from blogs are not weighted as highly as other links anymore.
Yeah. They also had a problem where people would go around to different blogs posting in the comments section where... Then, you know, I would go to 100 blogs and comment on those and stories on those blogs and in those comments put links to my site and that would make my rank go up. But now this is the thing where you, in the link, you say rel equals no follow. And that basically means Google completely ignores that link in terms of page ranking or anything.
Thus removing the incentive to spam blogs.
Yeah, so now all good blogs automatically put in the little no follow thing. So there's no point in spamming the comments to raise your page rank anymore.
Now, we don't know exactly who did the BMW site, but either they did it themselves internally, either knowingly or unknowingly, or they hired what is called an SEO, or a search engine optimizer. Now, you might see spam from these people occasionally. You probably find them when you search on various search engines. SEOs are about a micrometer above spammers in terms of ethics and morals.
Now, as far as I'm concerned, they're on the same level. They're just internet scum people who are using the internet to scam the internet itself and make money.
Yeah, they'll charge you money, and they'll optimize, in quotes, your site to make it appear higher in Google.
Mm-hmm. And they'll do things to other sites, like spam them, to make your rank higher in Google.
Or they'll run massive networks of fake sites that all link to each other to have their own high page rank, and then they'll link to you from that network.
Mm-hmm.
All sorts of things. And it looks like BMW.com.de did something like that, because they were doing a lot of shady things on their site.
Specifically, the one thing that you're really not allowed to do is, you have a web page, and the web page has a bunch of text, but then you have some JavaScript that edits all the content on the page, so when you visit it, it looks like a normal web page. But if you actually look at the source code of the page, there's a whole bunch of words in there, like used car, used car, used car, used car, that shouldn't be there.
So when Google noticed this on the BMW German site, instead of just quietly adjusting or ignoring it, they delisted them. They dropped their page rank to zero, removed the cache, and basically, unless you search for the URL itself of the BMW Germany site, you can't find it in Google anymore, period.
Yeah, I mean, you can get it by, I'm sure if you went to the thousandth page, it might be there, but I wasn't about to click that far.
I tried, and I couldn't find it.
A few hundred pages down, and I couldn't find it. So, PageRank Zero really sucks.
Yeah, so I guess the moral out here is don't use SEOs, don't be a spamming jackass, and follow the rules.
Yeah, just if you're going to make a web page for a reason, just make it for that reason, and don't try to grow up in the Google ranks. It's just, who cares?
Now, I saw on Slashdot a lot of people, especially web designers, were complaining about this. And their main complaint was that Google is, quote, dictating to me how to design my website. Because if you don't know, Google, one of the PageRank things is it looks at the content of your site. It looks at your HTML, it looks at your CSS, it looks at all sorts of things, and it has various weightings based on how often the content's updated, how it's arranged, etc. Now, if you have a site that's made entirely in Flash, say, there's no information for the Google spider to get, so your PageRank's going to be crap no matter how good your site is.
Well, if a lot of people link to it, you're all right.
Yep. But they won't find it based on the content, and it'll be kind of weighed heavily.
Well, they will.
You.
It depends on the content of the links linking to you. Like, if I post a comment in my blog that says, check out this awesome Flash site, then and that adds it so that if someone searches for awesome Flash site, you might show up.
True, but if someone's searching for content on your site that might not be linked to directly, but would appear on the site and would otherwise be found by Google spiders and weighted, it'll be weighted less, because as far as Google is concerned, your site doesn't have as much content as it wants to see.
Yeah, maybe.
And or
one
also,
really knows
like, if
for
you
sure.
use poor HTML, your site will be ranked more poorly, even if your content looks identical.
Oh, well, yeah, if you use poor HTML, then that's just what happens, because it's harder for the spider to read it the way it's written.
Yep, it's also harder for my web browser to read it, so knock it off.
Yeah, make web pages well.
But basically, all the people I saw complaining about this decision by Google were doing so for really kind of spurious reasons. They really didn't have any good arguments there.
No, I mean, Google is dictating to you how to make your website. Well, number one, you're still free to make whatever website you want.
Yeah.
What are you're trying to dictate to Google to rank you higher?
Google isn't an ISP. Google isn't anything. Google is just a company that says, we are going to present the internet to you in this way. If you like to see it in this way, please see it in this way. If not, then please don't come to our website. We don't care.
Yeah. So, you know, you don't have to do what Google says. If you want to go up in their page ranks, well, then, you know, you have to be good. And be good anyway. I mean, this isn't like some computer system that is going around delisting people randomly. You know, if you want to make a website that has different content and then renders it all differently with JavaScript, you can do that, and they probably won't delist you. This is like a person looking at it and saying, whoa, that's a spammer, and they don't do it often.
Yep.
So I wouldn't worry about it.
I'm hoping, in fact, that this ushers in a new era of Google cracking down on shit websites that pretend to be real websites.
I also think what it can do is if Google starts pushing people to obey certain web standards, then perhaps like IE will become more useless and Firefox more useful.
Ah.
Because an IE won't render sites that are properly written to show up high in Google and such and such.
You know what? Maybe the stupid Experts Exchange will finally disappear from Google.
Goddamn you, Experts Exchange.
I hate them so much.
You know who beats Experts Exchange?
How about those fake sites that just rip content from Wikipedia and put it in an HTML so you'll find it, and then it's just a spam site when you go there?
Well, you know who beats Experts Exchange? Bug Me Not.
Ah, Bug Me Not.
Yeah, Bug Me Not. All right.
Yeah, Bug Me Not.
Okay. So, there's this guy who is an ice cream man.
An ice cream man, eh? As in he sells ice cream in a truck that goes dingly, 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 dingly.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, the ice cream man would come down the street every day in the summer, and we'd all run out to buy ice cream.
Yep, my parents would always yell at me and tell me that it was a ripoff, but I didn't care.
Gum.
I was a kid and I wanted
ice
cream.
It wasn't a ripoff. It was like a cone for $1.25.
Cone? I always bought the WWF wrestler bar for $1.25.
If I was going to buy one of those, I would get like the Mario with the bubblegum nose or something.
No, it was all about either the Cookie Witch, the WWF bar, or just a regular old ice cream sandwich.
The Cookie Witch is awesome. He had the grated vanilla. I always got his vanilla on a cone, and the cone was really good, too. Or I got the thing that was red, white, and blue on a stick, but of course the white tasted bad. It was only the red and the blue that tasted good. So it was like red. You just cut the white off and eat the blue. But anyway, it was an ice cream man who is a pretty genius ice cream man, according to me. What he did is he's pirated a whole bunch of PlayStation games. A whole mess of them. Like, wow, that's a lot of PlayStation games. And he kept them in the back of his truck. And he sold.
Wait, so he was selling them?
And he sold them to kids. Just burned CDs of games. They caught him. He had a whole bunch of games in the back of his truck, and now he's busted.
Now, I wonder how they caught him. What kid would complain?
I don't know, but
who could possibly have found out? You know what? Someone didn't follow the rules of the playground.
Must not have been. Maybe a parent, maybe cops just saw him because they look out for ice cream. Maybe like I know ice cream men go to like Little League games and stuff all the time. Maybe there was like a cop coach or something. Who knows?
Well, I grew up in Detroit, and more than once, an ice cream man was busted for actually just selling drugs.
Wow.
They drive around, and they sell ice cream to kids just fine. But if you gave the right code word, they'd sell you drugs.
Would they accidentally sell drugs to someone who said the code word by accident and then got busted?
No, I think the cops were just onto it anyway and were kind of keeping eyes out for him.
Oh, okay, but
you
anyway.
You know, it's kind of suspicious when an ice cream truck goes through a kiddie neighborhood and sells candy.
Oh, well, this guy, he was in Britain. Maybe that had something to do with
it. Yeah, you know, goes to a kiddie neighborhood and sells ice cream, and then goes to a ghetto, and it's just like crazy-looking middle-aged men standing around giving large sums of money to an ice cream man.
Yeah. But anyway, he had 4,000 DVDs, CDs, and games that were seized during a raid on his business premises. So he didn't have all those in the truck. Yeah, so don't do that.
But I think you just said he was cool.
He is cool, but
so why not do it? Just don't get caught.
I guess. But I mean, seriously, don't buy from the guy because you can totally download this stuff.
There you go. All right, so my thing of the day, this is a little old, but that's just because we had the weekend lag here. But this here is a Super Mario Brothers 1 soundboard. It seems to have every single sound from the game, and it is quite fun, amusing, useful, and interesting.
I like it a lot.
Yeah, if we ever set up some more complex audio here, maybe we'll have it handy whenever we're doing the show.
Yeah, that would be cool. Be like, dude, I made some mad money today. Da-ding! Or something like that.
Yeah, that's all I got about that. It's cool. Check it out.
Well, my thing, we got, you might remember a while ago that some people made like trailers for old movies, but they changed the themes. So you, like, it was The Shining, but
it was a romantic comedy. Shining.
Well, no, that's a feel-good movie.
Whatever. All the same.
Whatever. Movies that we don't like.
They turn West Side Story into a zombie thriller.
Yeah, instead of a, you know, gang dancing singing thing. So some people decided to keep on keeping on with this little trend bit here. And usually when someone tries to copy something that's already done, they mess up and it's not so good. But these people seem to have kept the same level of quality, and they've taken Fight Club and made a Fight Club trailer that's a romantic comedy, and it's pretty good.
All right.
I liked it. You should watch it if you've seen Fight Club. Don't watch it if you haven't seen Fight Club, because you'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, Fight Club, for any of you out there who haven't seen it, is not really about fighting.
Although the fighting parts are kind of entertaining.
Yeah, but it's one of those movies like The Matrix where you get in to see it and it's not at all what you expect.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. It came out around the same time, I think, too.
Yeah, it did. I actually didn't see it for a while.
I didn't see Fight Club for a long time. I saw Matrix in the theaters. I didn't see Fight Club until way later. I think not till like 2000.
Ah. Though I never saw the second Matrix movie at all.
Oh, you're not missing much.
Yeah, I figured.
You know, if you cut the 20-minute rave scene out, it's not so bad.
You know, if you cut the key rape out of Kaguya-hime, it's not so bad.
Yeah, then it'll just be normal Magic Girl Girl Show, which is pretty bad.
So anyway, we decided, since being Science and Technology Day, that we'd talk about instant messaging.
Mm-mm, especially since I just changed IM clients today.
So you're going with Psy all the way?
Well, looking at version 0.1, definitely. 0.93, definitely not.
But basically, instant messengers, you know, AOL Instant Messenger, ICQ, MSN Messenger, Jabber, QQ.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, none of you have ever heard of QQ.
Yeah, all right, so let's start at the beginning here. Back in the ancient days when there was no real internet, it was dial up into existing computer networks that were providing services, you know, to anyone dialed up into them, such as the old Prodigy, BBS's, CompuServe, the original AOL, that sort of thing. There really wasn't instant messaging.
Yeah, in fact, the closest you got was on some BBS's, you could, like, message someone if they were online, like, by sending them a short text string.
Yeah, in the old days, in, like, Unix LANs, you could use, like, the chat program to
talk
to people. You talk and whatever. The message, Windows had, what's it called, the message box, jack-in-the-box guy?
I never even knew what he was or ever used him in any way.
Yeah, it was basically you could pop up messages in other people's computers if you had an old-school Windows for Workgroup-style LAN or like a Novell whatever type, whatever it was called.
Now, Scott and I both had very different early IM experiences because we're not going to cover the old history. We're pretty much talking about the rise of AOL Instant Messenger and ICQ into what we have today.
Yep. That's when it really started anyway.
And Scott was much more in the AOL Instant Messenger camp.
I had ICQ, though.
Yeah, but you seem to use AOL and like it more.
Yeah.
And I started with ICQ, and I actually never even touched AOL Instant Messenger other than trying it once and hating it until I got to college and no one I knew at RIT used ICQ.
Mm-hmm. Well, it all started because we used AOL, the program, you know, when AOL was... I think AOL still is a program. I don't know why people still use it, though, but...
See, I've never used or had AOL.
Yeah. Well, AOL was, like, the only ISP we could get for a long time.
Really?
The only ISP that was really, like, that would work.
See, I was on Prodigy Classic.
We didn't have ISPs in that day.
And then I switched from that to WOW, which money... It was the first one, the first ISP, that was a flat rate monthly fee, all you can access. It was like $20 a month. It was fantastic. And you know what? It was too good to be true. It went out of business about a year after it opened.
Yeah, we had AOL, which was $20 a month for unlimited, but it had some other ways of making money off of you, you know, because it was AOL.
Yeah, I guess I was real lucky. Me and my friend Ken, where we lived in Sterling Heights, Michigan, was actually way, way back, like 1996, they deployed cable modems as a test. So I've pretty much had broadband for most of my internet-using life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had dial-up pretty much until I went to college.
Wow.
I had a 56K modem. It worked well enough, but I didn't play 3D games online. But everything else was just fine.
See, before I got to college, I remember thinking that a ping higher than 50 was terrible. Then I got to RIT, and I remember thinking a ping higher than 5 was terrible.
Actually, the 56K modem was able to play like Tribes 2 online pretty well because Tribes 2 network code was written real well. But
yeah.
That wasn't until I got back from college and we had DSL. And
yeah, back then, games weren't so tolerant of latency.
Yeah.
I mean, Quake 1 and Quake 2. Quake 1 literally what your lag time was how long it took between when you clicked and when a rocket came out of the front of you.
Yep.
It was terrible.
Anyway, instant messaging. So AOL, the program, chat rooms were the big thing. Because, you know, when I was a little kid, high school, middle school, whatever, you know, you go into chat rooms, talk to people.
Yep.
Bleh.
My first moniker on the internet, for anyone who cares, because you won't be able to find anything about me, was Origins. I was Origins on Prodigy Classic a fuck long time ago.
I was Taser31460 on AOL.
Wow, you suck.
Yeah, so...
So wait a minute, I'm curious, where did you get that name?
So there was this old DOS game, which I don't remember the name of the game, but basically the way the game worked was you were in this car, hover car thing that also shot lasers or whatever, and you could go up, down, forward, backward, and rotate, turn left and right. So it was kind of like a first-person driving game, but you didn't race. Imagine it was like an FPS, but you could move up and down, and uh-huh. but you were in a car. You weren't shooting with your hand. And you went around shooting other cars, and it was an old DOS pixely thing. You couldn't type in a name in this game. You had to click on an existing nickname. So I always clicked Taser.
Did you know what a Taser was back then?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Uh-huh.
But it was, I figured, it's a cool name.
And then it was
and
already
that
taken.
Name also, if you picked Taser, you also got to be green.
That
was key.
Yeah, we often have fights over who is going to be green in various German board games here.
Right, so... Taser was my AOL name. Now, in AOL chat rooms, if you double-clicked on someone's name, you could open up a little tiny chat with them. And I never really thought of it as instant messaging. I just thought it as tiny chat with that person. But then, they eventually made it so you could keep people on a buddy list. It wasn't really IM. It was a buddy list first. And you would put people on your buddy list, and then if you clicked on them, you would, you know, do a little messaging with them. And then eventually, they said, you know what? There are a lot of people who don't have AOL that want to talk to AOL people. And they made AOL Instant Messenger a separate program. And it did all the things that AIM inside of AOL did.
Now, I started, in 1996 was the first time I ever used real instant messaging, was ICQ when it was founded, or it was built by Mirabilis, a company in Tel Aviv.
Israelis made it.
Yep. And it was basically a standalone IM thing, but it was extremely fully featured and very light and generally very awesome.
It was full of a ton of stuff.
Yep, it was very much not geared at people who didn't know a lot about the internet.
Like, it could check your email.
Yeah, it could do all sorts of stuff.
It could send SMS messages, which I never figured out how to use.
And the biggest thing about it was that it had the stateful away messages, where there were different types of away messages, and you could program it to say, if I'm in this kind of away messages, give me a message without making a noise. But if I'm in this away state, don't give me anything and whatever.
Yeah, AOL didn't have any. AOL still only has away and not away.
It also
and they
had,
didn't even have away for a long time.
It had two of my favorite features, and these two alone are the reason that I used ICQ for most of my life until I got to college. One, AOL Instant Messenger. You could only send a message to someone if you were both online.
Mm-hmm.
ICQ, if you were off, it would just save your message in the server and give it to the person as soon as they got online.
Well, the logic of AOL was that if someone wasn't online, you were going to use AIM to like talk to the person in a conversation, just like a chat room.
Yeah.
So that if you were going to send them a message that you wanted them to get and they weren't available for a discussion, you would send them an email because that's how it worked in AOL, the program.
Yep.
So that was the logic in the instant messenger.
ICQ's logic was that it is a standalone communication medium. And thus, if you sent a message, you would always get there. It was guaranteed that the message would get there. So it was more like fast email instead of chatting.
It was
it was instantaneous, so you could just chat in the window.
Yeah, you often chatted in the window, but it was a lot more like fast email, and it was slightly geared away from, you know, conversing. Unless you use the chat feature, which was making a chat room, there it was much easier to have a conversation.
Though I gotta say, I had straight up hour-long conversations with people just in the normal messaging.
Oh, yeah, I did too, because I did have ICQ once I figured out you could run other programs and minimize AOL. And I ran ICQ when I talked to a whole bunch of people mostly people I didn't know.
Yeah, that was the one thing that...
Talk to internet people with it.
All of you out there today really miss is that back... I don't want to sound like an old man, but back in our day, when IM was a new thing, honestly, there were very few asshats on it because asshats couldn't figure out how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So especially more so ICQ than AIM, because every AOL user could use AIM.
Every AOL user was using AIM, and every non-AOL user was using ICQ, which included most of the world other than the U.S.
Yep, even
so
to this day,
basically
most of the world uses ICQ or MSN.
Yeah, so it's basically, on ICQ in those early days, was all the early internet adopters worldwide. So most often your odds of talking to like a British guy or an Israeli guy were pretty high.
I mean, it was great because I honestly in high school I had friends in high school and whatever, but I really wasn't interested in most of the people that were near me physically in proximity. I, however, made a lot of interesting friends online, some of whom I talk to still to this day.
I didn't make friends online, but I did talk to random people about random stuff.
Well, I did that, and I kept talking to some of the same people over and over again. And, like, I have a friend in South Africa now, just because I talked to him back in the day, and I still talk to him occasionally.
Yeah. I never actually talked to anyone online that much to be a friend with them.
Well, ICQ also made it really easy to find people to talk to. It had a whole directory service built into it, where you could put in information about yourself, and you could say if you wanted to be searchable or not, and people could just search for you. It was like a giant LDAP.
Yeah,
directory.
I remember you could be online, or you could be free for chat, and free for chat was like, hey, random people, come talk to me. And
yep.
If you did that, you would just wait around, and people would just come talk to you. And sometimes I would sit there just searching for, like, high school girls and people who like computers and people who are playing the same video game I was playing right now and then trying to talk to them about it. And it worked a lot of the time.
Yep.
But sometimes I also remember sitting there for like 20 minutes not doing anything, just searching.
See, I always just had it on while I was doing other things, and then someone would pop up, hey.
But like, I would add a whole bunch of buddies and then delete them because I never talked to them again. And
yep. But think about what a different world is today. Back in the day, I was hoping for strangers to just say hi to me. Today, if I don't know immediately who you are when you talk to me, you get deleted, banned, blocked within about 3 seconds.
Yep.
Because I just don't want to deal with you.
That was back in the day.
Now, the other feature of ICQ that I loved was invisible mode. You could put yourself in invisible mode and be online, but no one could see that you were online unless you talked to them.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could make a list of, you could flag some people in your buddy list as like ultra friends or whatever, I forget exactly, and they had the ability to see you when you were invisible.
Yep.
So you could have like your inner circle of friends and then your outer circle of friends.
That was good for when someone was annoying you, but like right now, or like you didn't want to talk to someone right now, but you needed to talk to someone else.
Yep.
But you knew someone else was going to bother you, so you could be invisible and talk to the someone else, and then get really online to get the other person to jump on and annoy you.
Yeah, and AIM never really implemented any of those things.
Nope. But I think AIM really tried to keep it simple because most people who use it were AOLers.
Yeah, and I'll admit, ICQ was not simple.
Yeah, and actually, the interface of the normal ICQ program was never high quality. It was always blocky, and you would right-click, and you get this gigantic context menu.
You could edit that, but you had to go edit it.
Yeah, it was a giant context menu, and 90% of the options were just useless or crazy, and they didn't make sense a lot of the time.
Yeah, I mean, you could customize it all, but it took time.
It took a lot of time.
It was very much a Windows 3.1 style application.
It still is the Windows 3.1 style, I think. I haven't used it.
Well, the thing is, like, most people in the world used ICQ, and a lot of Americans used AIM. And then AOL bought ICQ.
That was a while later, though.
Yeah,
By then, there were a lot more competitors in the market.
The only big competitors ever to really come out were Yahoo Messenger, which not many people use to this day.
A lot of people are actually using Yahoo Messenger because it had these features like the webcamness, and the ability to do, like, the drawing chat where you can draw pictures on a shared canvas.
Oh, true. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yahoo added a bunch of those, like, happy little Yahoo-type things with, like, Java and whatever. And a lot of people were using Yahoo, you know, when it came out to do those sorts of things with each other. Like, I know people who would, like, they'd be AOL AIM people, but they would have Yahoo to do those other features. But MSN... Somehow MSN seems to have slowly built from no one uses that to a bunch of people use it. It's kind of scary.
Scarily enough, India is where MSN is king.
Yeah.
Everyone uses MSN there.
It seems like more and more people are using MSN here, too. It's like the people who use AIM seem to be the people who are AOLers. And then now that AOL is kind of dead, the people who got internet for the first time after the age of AOL, like since the age of cable modems, those people are all MSNers, because what do? They turn on a computer, and they have IE and MSN. They don't have AIM. It's not on there.
Now, the thing about instant messaging networks and why it matters is that you can't talk to people on a different network.
Mm-hmm.
So, especially back in the day for us, when there weren't these multi, like, trillion or GAIM, you had to run the client of every network you connected to.
Yep, and no one really wanted to run more clients. That was like,
Yeah,
painful.
Especially back when RAM was scarce.
Yeah, running AOL and ICQ at the same time was about my limit.
You would end up having to use whatever all your friends used.
Mm-hmm.
And when you moved to college, there are always the bitter wars where half the people used AIM and half the people used ICQ, and eventually one half caved in and everyone used the same one.
Yeah. Or you just didn't make friends with people who used other IM clients. I remember a couple times people were like, here's my MSN, and then I never talked to them because they had an MSN, and that was it. I never met them again because I never talked to them.
Of course, there was that fanboy in line for the TMR concert at Otakon that we just gave made-up AIM names to so we'd go away.
Yeah, don't ask me for my AIM. I'm not going to talk to you after I met you for 5 seconds at a con and you were annoying.
Oh, my God. Well, I joined the Dance Dance Revolution, DDR Maniacs, forums a long time ago when I was trying to build a hard pad for DDR. And not even thinking, I put my AIM name in my profile.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, I periodically get messages from punk kids asking me for help on making a DDR pad.
There was a point at which I had to set my GAIM so that it would not accept messages from people not on my buddy list, but now that doesn't happen anymore. I'm all right.
Yeah. Now, luckily, fairly recently, as in within the last many years, multi-protocol clients have come out.
Mm-hmm.
And despite their best efforts, they can't keep them out.
Yeah.
So basically, people who don't know a lot about computers use one instant messaging network, and that's it, because they just don't know how to use more.
Mm-hmm.
But the geeks out there connect to whatever IM networks they want. I have accounts on several of them, and I just route them all through my GAIM.
Yeah, I don't use my ICQ anymore, but for a while, I had a Jabber, an ICQ, an AIM, an IRC all running at the same time inside of GAIM.
Yep. Well, the thing is, AOL and ICQ are the same now. An ICQ number is the same as an AOL screen name.
Yeah, kind of. You can route to one through the other with some black magics and things.
It's not really black magic. If you have an AOL client and you add a number that happens to be an ICQ number, it just adds the person.
Does it really work?
Yeah.
Wow.
And vice versa.
When they developed the Oscar, which goes between, right?
Yeah. Well, that was also the big thing, that AOL was screen name based. Your screen name was unique no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
ICQ, you had a serial number, and you could pick whatever name you wanted. So there could be a million RIMs out there. That's fine. Each RIM had a different serial number and different user information.
Yep.
And I remember we had a 5-digit ICQ number that me and my brother shared.
Mm-hmm.
And the sad story is that later I got my own one and he got my own one. And mine was 1503-6112, which is significantly longer than that awesome 5-digit number, as was his. And then one day we saw on eBay that people were selling 5- and 6-digit numbers for a decent sum of money. And we remembered that we did not, in fact, know the password anymore, and that the email account it had been pegged to was long since gone.
Sorrow.
Yeah, the account is dead. It's still out there. It's under the name, God, I don't even remember. I could cry.
Yeah, my old ICQ number was 935-72776.
Wow, it's funny how we still remember them.
Well, actually, that wasn't my old ICQ number. That was the one that I got because you refused to use AIM for a while. But
yeah,
the one
I held out as long as I could.
The one I had before that was the same length in digits, but it began with 1. And that was like years earlier. So, yeah.
But now it doesn't matter. Just connect to everything.
Yeah.
And basically, for us at least, the wave of the future is Jabber.
Well, Jabber's been around for a long time, but now because AIM seems to be crumbling a little bit and, you know, this big flux in IM networks everywhere.
Yeah, well, basically AIM's crumbling and there's no good alternative.
Yeah, it's like, what can you use? MSN is poop. Yahoo is poop.
Yeah, I don't like the Yahoo clients and the Yahoo network's kind of funky.
Yeah, everything is kind of poop. And you know, if you want IM to stick around and not fill up with all this kind of junk that happens on it, Jabber seems to be the way to go, and Google's semi-supporting it, so.
Now, I guess to describe Jabber, because if you're technical at all, you probably know how Jabber works, at least on some level.
Mm-hmm.
But to describe it in an entirely non-technical way, with Jabber, it's like email, in that anyone can run a Jabber server anywhere. We're running one on the frontrowcrew.com servers right now for us.
No, don't tell them that.
Why not?
They'll try to sign up to it.
Then restrict it.
I did.
Great. But basically, we're running one now, and anyone can run one. You can run one on your PC if you want. Just mm-hmm. tunnel the ports through the router, whatever. And your name in Jabber is just whatever you want at, like an email address, your server's address.
And if you don't want to set up a server, I think Jabber.org has a free server that anyone can use.
Oh, there's dozens of free Jabber servers out there.
Yeah, and if you get Google Talk, it's basically just Jabber, except it's whatever you want at gtalk.com, I think.
Yep, and there's a good chance that eventually Gtalk Jabber for Google is going to open up and
I think
talk
they
to
might
Jabbers.
Have, I'm not sure, but I think I read something where they opened it up. But even if they didn't, it doesn't matter.
But the key thing is that everyone runs their own servers, and the servers all talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no big bad company with its crazy EULAs in the way to bring things down or censor you or log whatever you're saying or whatever evil they could do.
And it's also free.
Completely free. Free as in speech and as in beer.
Yep, and the way it works is so wide open in turn, you know, like if you want to write a program that does something to AIM, you have to do all sorts of reverse engineering to figure out how AIM works and all sorts of BS.
And Jabber, it's just XML.
Yeah, all it does is send plain XML over a standard TCP/IP connection. So if you want to write programs that do awesome things with Jabber, it's real easy.
Like, you could set it up where you could make your computer run a Jabber user, and you could, like, ask it questions, and it would Google and get answers for you.
Oh, you can make all kinds of crazy...
Or you could set it up so if you you send a certain thing to your Jabber guy, it'll call someone's cell phone and leave a voicemail on it.
Mm-hmm.
Almost anything.
Anything a computer can do, you basically can make it so that computer programs can talk to you via Jabber.
Or talk to each other via Jabber.
Or that you can talk to computer programs via Jabber and tell them what to do.
I always wanted to make a bot that would look through all... I think someone else had this idea too and they were talking to me about it. That would look through all my logs of conversations I've had with people and basically be a non-interested RIM bot so I could set that on people I don't want to talk to at the moment.
I think someone already made that.
Yeah, I should get it and see if it works.
Yeah. Jabber also has other features like priority setting.
Yeah, so say, like, a lot of people will have either one AOL account and they log into it all over the place, which causes all sorts of hell.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll have a bunch of AOL. Like, I have my AIM name, then I have my secret AIM name that only a few people know, and I use that one at work or when I'm on the road. And it's kind of a pain in the ass to have two different names. Jabber, you just set a priority. So messages will always go to the highest priority client that's online
by default,
at any given
by default.
Time. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, you set a resource and a priority. So let's say I log in on my desktop. I call the resource desktop, and I set a priority of, I don't know, zero. Then I go to my laptop, and I sign in, and I set the resource to laptop, and I set the priority to five. Now, if someone sends a message to me at me.com, whatever I am, it'll go to the laptop because it has a higher priority.
But if the laptop logs off, it'll go to his main one instead.
Yep. Now, let's say someone sends a message to me at me.com/desktop. They can specifically say they want it to go to my desktop computer and not to my laptop where I am now. And I can set different status messages for different places. I could be like, I'm away at my laptop, but I'm do not disturb on my desktop, and I'm here on my telephone.
Also handy-dandy, many ways of encrypting things, and basically,
it's really great.
Jabber is like ZomboCom.
It can do anything.
You can do anything. Anything.
Anything is possible. But the problem with Jabber is that the only way to make things in Jabber work is to use a proper Jabber client.
GAIM, I love you, but why don't you support the freaking priorities in Jabber? It's an integer.
It doesn't
have
support any of the features of Jabber except talking to people. Jabber has this mountain.
No, you can set your resource name.
You can set your resource name. That's it. It doesn't support any of the other important Jabber features.
Which ticks me off because other than that, GAIM is beautiful.
Yeah, look, GAIM supports more features in the closed and secret AOL than in the wide open public Jabber protocol. Come on. But anyway, if you use PSI or Exodus or any of the other real Jabber clients, you can do all the things that Jabber does.
But you don't need to. I mean, if you aren't a power user and you're just using your regular AOL name and you just have one and you just kind of use it however, if you just use GAIM or Trillion to connect to Jabber, you'll be just fine. You don't have to worry about all that.
You just message people back and forth. It's like normal.
Yep. I also like the fact that my name is now exactly what I want. I'm Rim at frontrowcrew.com.
Yeah, I'm all me.
As opposed to Shazar105 or 1503611.
Yeah, that's really cool. So, a lot of people don't realize there's this, I don't know what you want to call it, controversy?
Yeah, disconnect, schism.
Right, basically what it is every nerd in the world is intelligent. That's what makes them nerds. And when they type a message into their instant messenger, they want to send the message. They don't push enter. Enter goes to the next line. You know, if they want to send the message, they push control and enter at the same time.
Well, basically where this started was ICQ, by default, was a text box and a send button. And you typed your text, and if you had enter, just made a new line. And when you were done typing your message, you either clicked on send or the shortcut control enter.
Yeah, no, because that was ICQ wasn't really supposed to be a conversation. You were actually sort of typing a semi-email. So pushing enter to go to a new line made a lot more sense because they thought you were going to write something big.
So when I first switched to AIM, I'd freaking send half messages to people left and right. It pissed me off to no end.
Yep. Now, the thing is, when you want to send a message, control enter is the only way that makes sense. Because how else can you make a new line? If you set enter to send the message, how do you send a message that is multiple lines long?
You can't. Set it so control enter makes a carriage return.
But that makes no sense either. How can you type like that?
That's, well, I think part
that's
of
not
it,
good typing.
It's hard to say. There's definitely a post hoc, proctor hoc situation here. But in AOL, enter sent the message. And the way AOL was, it seems that people sent very short messages. People would type a single sentence, and the single sentences would fly back and forth. And I've noticed that in AOL, back in the day and now, people would type, if they wanted to type a multi-sentence message, they type each sentence and send them one at a time. So you'll send someone three or four messages before they respond to you. In ICQ, I remember very specifically, I would send like a paragraph to someone, and then a minute later, they'd send a paragraph back to me.
Well, I think the reason I usually send one sentence at a time when I'm going to say a bunch of stuff is because AIM only has a certain limit of characters you can send in one message.
Yes, ICQ's message limit was much greater.
I don't think Jabber has a limit. I had to go check.
I found that it does, at least through GAIM, because when I send you a large message, it automatically splits it into two or three.
That might be GAIM.
Yeah, or it might be our Jabber server.
I don't think it's the Jabber server. I'll go check it out.
Yeah.
Because sending large messages, you know, especially sometimes you're having a conversation, but sometimes you're sending someone something that's not quite an email and not quite an IM. Like, you're sending them a link and a description of it.
You know, or like, you're giving someone driving directions to somewhere.
Yeah, like, go left, go right, go left, go right. You know, type that, you know, whatever.
I mean, I guess the interesting thing I've noticed is that it used to be that instant messaging was a lossy kind of, oh, you just talk to people whenever. And email was like the communication of record. Now, mm-hmm. To me, email is lossy, and I don't trust email to get anywhere, and I don't trust that anyone gets an email I send.
Well, I trust that they'll get the email. The thing is, I don't trust if they'll actually go and read it. An email is sort of like sending a letter. It's like this old-fashioned thing, and IM is what you use to communicate with people.
I mean, honestly, I leave my computer on 24/7 all the time. My IM is always on, and it's always been on since 1996 when I first got ICQ. And I would just use it like email and like instant messaging all rolled into one.
Yep. I'm logged into AIM or Jabber most of the time during the day and night. You know, sometimes it goes off a little bit, maybe when I'm on my way to work or something, but eventually I'll have a cell phone that can log into Jabber in some way, and I'll be all set.
Yeah, I can log into AIM on my cell phone. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, I mean, well, the BlackBerry can do it, but it really sucks because what it does is convert every message into an email, which is terrible on the BlackBerry interface.
Great.
You know, I think I can pay money for a real client, which I might do someday in the future if the client is quality enough, but we'll see.
Well, at any rate, I think we've talked enough about that for now, since we've gone a good half hour just on this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're going to do another show on this sometime. I think we'd like to cover the kind of culture of instant messaging.
Yeah.
You know, the all the smiley faces and crap you see today and where they came from. And honestly, there are different dialects of smiley. And it's kind of interesting to see like the types of smileys the different types of people tend to use.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah, so that'll be another show.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for our opening theme.
Be sure to visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com. If you like our podcasts, you'll love our forums. Make sure you visit them. You can send your email feedback to geeknights@gmail.com. And if you want, you can leave us a voicemail at 206-333-1537.
Geek Nights airs every weeknight, Monday through Thursday.
Geek Nights is recorded with absolutely no studio and no audience. But unlike those other talk shows, it's actually recorded at night.